Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're about to have a conversation with Congresswoman, Donna Edwards, who represents Maryland's 4th Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives, and of course, is seeking to become the nominee for the Democratic Party for the U.S. Senate to replace Barbara Mikulski and sit in the U.S. Senate. And Congresswoman, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you. It's great to be back with you, Mark.
And you all can join us here. Please do call in 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Go on to our Facebook pages. But do call in 410-319-8888 as we have another conversation with Congresswoman Donna Edwards. I almost said Senator, but I didn't say it.
It's less of a mouthful than Congresswoman.
Yeah, it has to be a better neutral, gender-neutral way of saying that.
That's right.
So,
I like it.
So, but let's talk about what just happened. I understand, right, you just came off of the floor of Congress reading the names of 300 people who have been murdered in Maryland. Do I have that right?
It is, and you know, we only get 5 minutes on the floor, and I couldn't even get through the entire list, which I've entered into the record, but 301 lives have been lost to gun violence in Maryland, and we've only had 280 days this year. And I just think it is time for Congress to stop standing up after these mass shootings, which seem to occur more often than not, and stop having the moments of silence and take a moment of action. And we just can't do this anymore. And I think it's important for us to call out those names, because some of them were names that were lost because of domestic violence or because of mental health or just because somebody had easier access to a gun than not. And it's time for Congress to take some action. And so I read their names on the floor of the House of Representatives, and I am encouraging all of my colleagues to do the same. We may not be able to find all the names because, you know what, the National Rifle Association and members of Congress have been complicit in keeping us from even being able to keep track of data, even being able to do research on gun violence. That is how aggressive the National Rifle Association has been in trying to keep us from enacting sensible gun regulation that most Americans should be able to and do agree with.
So let me ask a few questions here about that before we talk about other things. I mean, can you talk about the power of the NRA on Capitol Hill, where that comes from, why it's so intense, why both Democrats and Republicans are so influenced by that organization to vote against what most people in America seem to want?
Well, and I do think that the NRA and its, its bidding for the gun industry, it is not working on behalf of responsible gun owners, because responsible gun owners believe that we should have background checks. Responsible gun owners believe that we should be able to look at the technologies that could actually prevent the kind of violence that we've seen. The NRA works for the gun industry, which wants to sell more guns and make more profits off of selling guns. And they have a lock hold on this Congress. They give away a lot of campaign contributions. They lobby Congress a lot. I'll tell you one thing. They don't have a lock hold on this member of Congress because I'm going to stand them down. I'm going to call them out and just say, get out of the way so that we can do what most Americans want us to do.
So, again, it talks about what kind of power kind of is there in the halls of Congress. But what do you think can really be done? I mean, you mentioned mental health. You mentioned the murders taking place. And we had a huge show on this just the other day. On Monday, we had a program kind of addressing this. And one of the things that really struck me is that the stats between, if I have this correct, 1998 and the year 2013, or 1990 and the year 2013, there's an average of 8,000 black men a year killed by gun violence. And it's like we're not just being blind to what's happening in the poorest segments of our country, and people were afraid to use the word poverty, afraid to kind of address it.
Well, you know, most young men in this country, to the extent that they lose their lives until they're about age 24, actually lose their lives in car accidents, but not for young black men. Young black men lose their lives because of guns. And so it is an impact that is really, you know, pervasive through so many communities. And let me just say, this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. October is
right.
Domestic Violence Awareness Month. More women lose their lives, 10 times more women lose their lives to gun violence in the United States than in other places in the world, in domestic violence incidences. I mean, even in Maryland, as a result of domestic violence, there have been 54 deaths, and 40 of those were due to firearms. 40 out of 54 domestic violence deaths in Maryland were due to firearms. And so, you know, I just think it is really time for us to do something. And how dare Republicans stand up and ask for a moment of silence when they won't even take the action that it would take to end this kind of violence. And, you know, the mass shootings take place, and there's more mass shootings than we've ever seen before. But every day there's a mass shooting because every day 91, 92, 88 people lose their lives to gun violence in this country. It's just that it doesn't happen all in one place. It's one at a time. It's one community after another, and it's time for us to do something about it.
Folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888. We're talking with Donna Edwards, congressperson from most of Prince George's County, but also other parts of the state around Washington, D.C., the 4th Congressional District, who's seeking the nomination to become the next U.S. Senator from the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. We want to hear your thoughts and have your questions. And one of the things that's in the news at this moment is TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is
right.
We had a discussion on that at the top of the show here this morning at 10 o'clock. And just your thoughts on that. And there are so many parts of this. Well, first, let me ask this question. Well, one of the things that really strikes me about this TPP is the first trade agreement that I can remember that's being done in secret, which is pretty mind-boggling.
Well, and that even members of Congress who have the responsibility to vote on it have not really been allowed to either review the negotiations, look on at the negotiations, and really review the documents. I am looking forward to looking at the final documents, not things that are in brackets, not things that, you know, are question marks and missing. I want to see the whole thing. I want to read the whole thing. What I know now tells me that this Trans-Pacific Partnership covering 40% of the world's economy is a bad deal for working people in this country. It will trade away even more jobs than we have seen traded away over the last 20-some years with the North America Free Trade Agreement and all of the progeny agreements since that time. And so I voted against Fast Track. I am adamantly opposed to a Trans-Pacific Partnership that doesn't respect worker rights and human rights, environmental protection and our environmental regulations, food safety regulations, doesn't deal with currency manipulation so that U.S. businesses can operate on an even playing field. This may be good for multinational, transnational corporations, but it's not good for working people.
So you've called for, if I have this right, two questions about this political campaign. You've called for more debates, open debates?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe in debating the issues because there are differences between Mr. Van Hollen, my opponent, and I. There are differences on trade as evidenced by our records. Mr. Van Hollen has supported 9 of the last 11 trade agreements. He didn't even come out opposed to Fast Track until after he was in the Senate race. And so I think it's important for us to debate these issues. Issues like Social Security and Medicare. I've been standing up protecting Social Security and Medicare, arguing to strengthen it, you know, supporting legislation to strengthen it and build on it. While Mr. Van Hollen has said, I'll cut a deal and I'd consider cuts to Social Security and Medicare just to get a budget deal. You know what? I think those are important issues for Marylanders to consider as they consider who they want to represent their voice in the United States Senate. Somebody like me isn't talking about things at a 30,000-foot level because, you know what, I know what it means to put a paycheck together and go to a grocery store and have to worry about paying rent and juggling student loans. These are important parts of the public policy conversation, and Donna Edwards, representing the people of the great state of Maryland, needs to be around the table so that working people's voices are making decisions for Maryland and for this country.
So what are the issues around Medicare and Social Security? What are the differences you're talking about, and what are the key issues here? Because we're seeing things that Social Security is always under attack as an entitlement that we can't afford.
Right. Well, so I believe that we can actually strengthen and build on Social Security by making sure that, you know, whether you're Bill Gates or you know, Warren Buffett, that you can pay into Social Security for all of your income, making sure that we include all your income so that you pay into Social Security and make it solvent for generations to come, strengthen the benefits. Mr. Van Hollen, in the context of he claims that he's a leader on the budget, but when he was negotiating the budget, guess what he said? He was willing to trade away. He was willing to trade away, willing to consider cuts to Social Security and Medicare just to get a budget deal. I think no way that would be good for Maryland. No way it would be good for this country. Medicare and Social Security are a foundation principle of the Democratic Party. I will stand on that for our seniors, for those who need Social Security just to get by because they've lost their pensions in this economy. They've lost 401k plans because the market has been played with and manipulated so much over these last decades. And so rather than arguing for working people and people who work for a living and want to live out a secure retirement, taking away their benefits, cutting away their benefits, I believe that we can strengthen those programs. And it was in Mr. Van Hollen's words that he said he was, quote, willing to consider cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And so, you know, that's not Donna Edwards. That is not Maryland voters are going to know that they get the straight-up deal with Donna Edwards. I am not going to pretend. I'm not going to cut a deal. I'm not going to trade away their economic security. I'm not going to trade away their retirement security. I'm going to fight for every single Marylander who wants to work, to get a good job, earn a decent living, take care of themselves and their children, and build a stronger life for them and their families. It's what every family wants, whether they live in Oxon Hill or Hagerstown.
So, I understand you've all have agreed to six debates. Is that correct? No.
I've challenged him to six debates.
Challenged him. Oh, thank you. Okay, right.
He hasn't agreed to anything. And so I think that first debate needs to take place in Baltimore. Baltimore is our largest city. Our economic survival in Maryland depends on having a strong Baltimore that works for all those who live in the city because it strengthens our entire state. And the fact is that if Baltimore doesn't succeed, the state of Maryland doesn't succeed. And so I have said we need to have our first debate in Baltimore. I've also said I think it's important for us to debate in front of the black press. I mean, Maryland is one of these states where, frankly, the African-American population makes up a significant portion of our Democratic primary and our state. And so that press needs to be heard. Our Hispanic press needs to be heard. And I want to do this all across our state because I'm willing to go into any community. You know, Mark, the thing that you know about me is that I grew up in a military family. I have lived everywhere, and I have lived around everyone. There's not a single place in Maryland that I believe doesn't share the interest of wanting to build a stronger life for themselves and their families, and I want to represent those interests in the United States Senate.
You raised the issue of Baltimore, and clearly Baltimore is a city that, like many cities in America, many old industrial cities in America, is really struggling. With the problems with vacant houses, people living in a huge portion of Baltimore City, living in real poverty, and living around and in poverty, and with violence all around, and the issues with schools and debates over charter schools and more. So, I mean, so what do you say to the people of Baltimore, and how do you address that?
Well, I say, first of all, we have to have a concerted policy that deals with our urban centers. And as I said, Baltimore is our largest city. If it fails, the rest of our state fails. So each of us, no matter where we live in our state, has an interest in making sure that Baltimore is a thriving and surviving city. We do that by making sure that we challenge our governor in investing in our schools. No matter what zip code you live in, you should go to a good school, not a school that has 20th century technology, a school that has 21st century technology, so that our young people can compete in this economy, in what is, we know, a global economy. Making sure that we make investments in our historically black colleges and universities that are educating so many of our young people and doing a great job at it. Making certain that we rebuild our communities, people who can have skills in a community, learn a trade, and rebuild their own community. Open up their business, incentivize, and we can do this through our tax code. We can do it through our investments. by actually incentivizing activity in some of our hardest hit areas. You know, it's really easy to go and build new. It's really easy to go out there and invest in places where people are already doing well. The hard part is making the choice to invest in places that are struggling. And you're going to have a United States senator who understands that in order for all of the rest of us to do well, we have to make those investments in places that are struggling.
You know, and those are kind of very critical issues. You also call for open debates. And I'm wondering, we just had on this program a little bit ago, in part of our discussion on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Margaret Flowers, who I think will be the nominee for the Green Party. When we talk about open debates in the general election, what's your stance about this idea of open debates? Should you win the nomination and face Republican opponent, there may be a Green Party candidate as well. How does that fit into the debate scheme politically for you?
You know what? So I've built my life and my career working on civic participation and engagement. Far be it from me to exclude anyone who's running to make sure that they get to communicate their views to the voters. I believe and feel strongly about the views and the values that I share as a Democrat. And when I win the nomination, I will feel strongly about proudly asserting those in a debate with whomever wants to take me on.
So let's talk the politics for a moment. Chris Van Hollen clearly has a huge edge in money. This is a straight political question, which is always tough in any campaign because there's campaigns in America are built around money. Your colleague on the House, J.P. Sarbanes, John Paul Sarbanes, has kind of raised this issue a lot in terms of trying to get money out of politics because of what it's doing. So what about that question of what you face in terms of raising money to make this campaign against somebody who's logged in so much?
Well, first of all, I think that the last set of elections demonstrated that Marylanders are tired of having our Democratic Party establishment sit in the back room and pick and choose the candidates. And so, you know, Mr. Van Hollen can be the chosen one. He can raise, you know, that amount of money from all kinds of sources. Heaven only knows what they're going to be asking for in return. But the reality is that this is about building a campaign to reach out to voters and make sure that our voices and values are heard as working people. And I look forward to taking on Mr. Van Hollen in that challenge. And the reality is that all of us, I for certain, have spent a lifetime working on getting money out of politics. I mean, I was the member of Congress who introduced the first constitutional amendment.
That's right.
In the Congress to get rid of Citizens United. Mr. Van Hollen wouldn't even come on to that because he thought it was like too far afield. Well, it turns out now virtually all of our colleagues here on the Democratic side support an amendment to the Constitution. The President of the United States supports an amendment to the Constitution. The Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, supports a constitutional amendment. And so even though I may have started out someplace that I was the lonely one, now everyone has come on board. That is what leadership is about. And I intend to have that communication and that conversation with voters all across our state. And I'm not going to let Mr. Van Hollen's fundraising prowess and being the chosen one, the Democratic Party establishment, keep me from continuing to have the voice for the people of the great state of Maryland. I will get out there. We are running an amazing campaign. We have strong grassroots support, strong coalescing union support all across. In fact, I just got the endorsement of the Machinists Union just a couple of weeks ago, the Bricklayers before that, our local Teamsters and IBEW. I feel strongly about the kind of campaign I'm running because I will govern the way that I run for office, and that is speaking the truth to the power of the party establishment, whether they are Democrats or Republicans, as long as we make certain that we can do right by working people.
So let me ask you another kind of political question here, going back to the U.S. Congress in which you serve. Could you give us an insider's view of what is going on? In terms of the battle over the next speaker and what's happening on the other side of the aisle from you?
Well, what I will say is that Democrats, as Democrats in the House, we are absolutely united behind our leader, united behind wanting to do something for working families in this country, wanting to make sure that we pay our bills on time, wanting to make sure that we keep the government open, wanting to make sure that we do a long-time transportation and infrastructure bill so that we put people back to work and rebuild our transportation for the 21st century. Meanwhile, the Republicans are busy trying to shut down government over women's health care, it's just a party of absolute chaos. But we are united in what we want to do for and on behalf of working people in Maryland and across the country. And so we just have to watch their calendar of chaos. And meanwhile, the work that needs to be done, keeping the Export-Import Bank going, because that means a lot of jobs for Marylanders with the Export-Import Bank, making sure that we pay our bills on time by raising the debt ceiling. That's just about paying your bills. And so simple things like that, and, of course, marching right to December 11th and making sure that we do not shut down the government. So I can't say what they're doing over there. I want them to get it get it done or not, but I don't want them to do any more harm to our economy, any more harm to the American people.
Is it, and this is a final, I'm just curious, I mean, for you, is it frustrating for you to work in a body where the power has shifted for lots of very complex reasons, but really shifted towards the right?
But I do think that there are things that we can and we should be able to accomplish, even in this environment, simple things like keeping the government open, that we should be able to accomplish. And it's sad that last week 151 Republicans voted to shut down government. 151 Republicans. Had it not been for the overwhelming vote of Democrats and a Spartan, couple of handful of Republicans, the government would have shut down over women's health care. And so I want to work with Republicans who are serious about governing and making change for this country. I believe that there are some, but they need to resolve their chaos.
Well, we won't hold our breath.
That is true.
So when does your campaign take you to Baltimore?
Oh, my gosh. Every day. I was in Baltimore yesterday. I was actually over in Harford County as well yesterday morning. About every couple of days, I'm in Baltimore at some community organization, meeting with a church and church leaders, meeting with unions and workers, meeting with our small business community. Who knows that they need a strong and vibrant Baltimore and federal government in order for us to grow business in our great state. And so I'm excited about this campaign. I'm excited about the energy. We've recruited, something like 1,500 volunteers just in the last couple of weeks on the energy and enthusiasm of this campaign. I was over at the University of Maryland, Baltimore College, just a couple of days ago, meeting with students over there. We had a room filled with students who could have been on their lunch hour, but instead wanted to talk about the direction of the state. They wanted to talk about the fact that they're carrying so many burdens of student loans that it holds them back from starting businesses and buying homes and moving out of their parents' homes. And so I think that they believe that I will represent those interests because they know that they'll have somebody who understands what it means to pay back student loans and to meet those responsibilities, and they will have a strong advocate and lawmaker in the United States Senate.
So information on your campaign, where can people go before we have to take a break?
Oh, thanks for asking. So www.DonnaEdwardsForSenate.com. That's DonnaEdwardsForSenate.com. DonnaEdwardsForSenate.com.
Congresswoman Donna Edwards, always a pleasure to talk with you, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark.
Take care. And thanks for what you do on the House floor this morning.
Thank you.
Take care. We have to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we're going to have a preview of the Baltimore International Black Film Festival and hear what's happening in the City Papers 2015 beer issue. Stay with us.